love you so much. Why did we have to wait so long?
Well, I wrote you after I cracked up my plane.
And scared me half out of my wits. You wouldn't believe what that hospital doctor told me when I called.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, according to him, you were more dead than alive. Almost every bone broken, completely torn, mangled, smashed.
And you don't think it was true?
Well, now, how could I? Look at you. You haven't got a mark. You haven't got a scar. You're much more handsome than ever. Do you know that nobody would believe you were even in a plane crash?
But it was true, though, Joyce. By all rights, I should be dead.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, and today's going to be a weird one. You know, we're trying something a little different. Trish just came back from Paris and London, so yes, she was in the Europe zone before travel bans and stuff. Mm-hmm. She just made it back. She's fine. She's not feeling bad or whatever, but she is doing the responsible thing and staying away from the studio for a little bit just to make sure. Do the 14 days and the whole bit, right? Mm. And we may practice some of the self-distancing over the next little bit to be responsible as well. I mean, we have to acknowledge it is happening in the world. Normally, we like to record in the studio where it sounds better. Everybody's kind of got the same levels, the same atmosphere. And we may try something a little different over the next few weeks just to be responsible as a program. So if you hear little audio issues over the next few weeks... Blame it on Google Hangouts.
Yeah, or my place is haunted, or it's zombies.
Yeah.
One of the many variations.
Okay, so today we're going to be talking about a fan request. This is a fan challenge from Cade. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago to let you know this was coming. And so this week we're going to be talking about and remaking The Alligator People from 1959. This weird little creature feature that... This was a Fox film, and it was actually independently produced, and then Fox bought it to use as a double feature with The Return of the Fly, which we've never done. We've done the original Fly, but we've never done The Return of the Fly.
I don't think we need to.
No, we don't.
We haven't done any sequels. No. We've got so much to choose from. There's a
sequel I do want to do, though. Fright Night 2.
Yes, we should do that one.
Yeah.
Just because we've done Fright Night.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I've had some people argue that it's a remake of the first one. But that's exactly what they did with the original Fright Night, and then they changed the character to female, and they did the exact same thing with the Fright Night 2 remake. So, as far as I'm concerned, that's a fucking remake.
It's a fucking remake.
It is a remake.
This is Sam, by the way. Jay didn't do his introduction today.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't done this yet. Sam is actually in the studio with me today, and Trish is in self-isolation at the moment for just to be safe and respectful and do the appropriate thing, so...
Yeah, and she sounds good and healthy.
And hopefully,
I mean, I'm good, and that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
Well, that's the whole thing with the self-isolation thing. I may not exhibit symptoms, but I could still pass it on if I have it on or around me.
Mm-hmm.
So just to be safe.
Hopefully everybody's at home playing it safe and binging on podcasts and enjoying Invasion of the Remake. Hopefully you're not stopping listening to podcasts while you're at home and while you have Netflix instead of listening to us on your morning commute.
This is your opportunity to catch up.
Yeah.
There's lots to catch up on.
Lots and lots to catch up on.
Yeah.
So this is Cade's request, and I was kind of excited about because it was a movie I'd never heard of before, and I kind of enjoyed this. I mean, there were times it lagged. Sometimes it does feel kind of long for its short 74-minute runtime, but
there was one point there, I'm sorry, I enjoyed the movie, but I did doze off for about 5 minutes. I'm sitting there right before all the action sort of happened. It just kind of got draggy, and I'm like nodding off. You can't see me nodding off right now, but I was doing it.
I hate how everything kind of happens in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's a lot of buildup to a really fun ending.
There's a lot of nuance to it. There's a lot there, but basically this film is about a woman who was engaged to be married. She wasn't sure, but they were newlyweds, if nothing else.
Yeah.
And they were on a train, I think, assuming on their way to the honeymoon. Husband gets a telegram and disappears.
Yeah, gets off the train.
And he's gone. And so now we have this mystery of what happened to her husband. And she's gone looking for her husband and gone to found this address on this estate in
Louisiana.
Yeah. Has gone searching for him there, and they're all pretending they've never heard of him. And things are revealed along the way. So I kind of like it, kind of winds up being this missing person mystery for the bulk of the movie, while the B plot is kind of the monster part of it, monster movie.
And I think that this movie could have been a lot more fun if you didn't have alligator people in the title. Mm-hmm. Because it kind of gives away the
it's too spoilery of a title.
It is a very spoilery title. Mm-hmm. Because it set up a really interesting mystery possibility with the missing person story and so on, and then you get to the monster part and it's kind of already expected, and it removes the shock of it.
Yeah, you're just kind of waiting on it at that point. You're like, come on, get to the people, get to the alligator people.
Yeah, and it's the alligator person.
Yeah. Well, no, there are people. We just, the rest of them, we almost never see.
Yeah.
I think we saw one other person with partially scaly skin. Everybody else were under these cool onesies.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like these faceless onesies.
And that's a great way to save money on the facts, I guess.
But. Yeah. I actually quite like those. Yeah. I thought that those were actually freakier than seeing the alligator people.
Because they were so bad.
Well, it was 59.
But I'm sorry. I was watching. I was comparing it to Black Lagoon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, it doesn't hold up to the creature effects there at all.
Exactly. So it's possible to do good creature effects better than they were. I mean, sorry, the rubber suit at the end. Yikes.
Oh, yeah, that's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some really bad in this. Fun story, but there's some really bad in it, too.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say, like, with Paul Webster, the scaly facedness of him, I didn't find that too bad.
No, that one was
not
bad.
Somebody with a skin problem. His voice, though, that was weird.
Oh, thank you for saying it. I was actually going to introduce myself in that voice. I'm like, I can't do that voice.
What's wrong with me?
She can't see me this way.
And Boris Karloff.
Yeah, that was bad.
That was one of those things that kind of yanks you out of the film.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I understood what he was trying to do, but it just didn't work.
Times where I found like the dialogue was so melodramatic.
Yeah. It was 1959. Of course it was.
Yeah. There were times where I was just laughing. And it's kind of, you remember Gremlins 2, where they deliberately go in to make fun of a scene in the first film?
Yes.
And that's kind of where I felt like, I'm like, oh, I almost want to parody this film. But at the same time, there's some good dramatic beats in this movie. But sometimes the drama turns into melodrama, and it's pretty funny.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
From 1959, it's actually probably was a pretty good movie for being a B-film and on a double bill, right?
Yeah,
a double bill and a monster film.
You know what? The opening portion of it, where she's being put under hypnosis, and they're getting the story out of her, and then she tells how, like, she's traveled to this place to, like, find her missing husband, and it was very Twilight Zone to me. And they talk about the cypresses. Like, it was building very well, I felt, at that point. Like, that was very mysterious. There's a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then it sort of kind of falls off the rails when she kind of gets there.
It's funny you say that, because I was kind of making those associations with the Twilight Zone as well.
I didn't make it exactly that one, but I enjoyed it. I love the way they set it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I thought about that. I didn't like the framing sequence that much. I mean, I guess it works for 1959, where she's so traumatized, she's just created this whole new personality and wiped out the personality of Joyce for this new personality of Jane. So you've got these two psychologists digging into it. And she's retelling the story while under hypnosis. So starts off dozy, and then when we cut back to the narration, she doesn't sound so dozy anymore. It just sounds like she's telling people. So there's an inconsistency in the narrative, the way they've presented that, which I felt wasn't working, at least the way they presented it. It was part somewhat problematic. And in the end, you don't need those guys.
No, you don't.
I was just thinking, like, when I was watching it, I didn't quite, it took me a while to get that it was another personality. I actually kind of interpreted it as she was just lying. She just created this new life for herself and was just lying her way through it, but couldn't lie under hypnosis.
That's possible, but I have a feeling she actually couldn't remember. The way I interpreted it, she couldn't actually remember until she was under hypnosis.
And I think I like that better, to be honest, for the fact that she has repressed it that deeply.
Yeah, it's PTSD.
Yeah. Mm. And didn't they give her sodium pentothal?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, I wanted to make sure that I remember that correctly. I watched a lot of movies in the last few days because, well, we're staying in.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah, Netflix and everybody else must be doing quite well as far as the streaming platforms go.
I'm sure.
Yeah. God,
my casting reflects what I've been watching.
Surprisingly, mine doesn't. Usually it does.
Yeah, mine doesn't either.
Yeah. Actually, as I was watching it, I knew who my Jane Joyce was. Like, about the time she arrived in Louisiana, I'm like, I know who I'm using as my Jane Joyce.
Oh, I had difficulty casting this because nothing really popped into my brain. I had certain physical types I was looking for, but
oh no, my casting specific informs something that I would really like to do with our remake. That's all I'm going to say for now.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to that. There was one character I cast who's actually didn't get a credit on IMDb, and that was Toby. The butler,
okay.
He doesn't get a cast credit, which is weird because he's actually in it almost as much as anybody else.
Yes.
And has dialogue.
As much as Lon Chaney's in it, he's in it.
Exactly. And Lon's not in that much, really, but he gets a good billing because it's a recognizable name. But boy, did he look old in this one.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. I mean, he was getting older.
Yeah.
I mean, you figure
he'd been in the industry for well over 30 years at that point. So
yeah, he was definitely older. Oh, his character was so disturbing. He was the most disturbing part of the whole movie.
Yeah, well, he was the true monster of the movie.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And that's a good angle, the human factor, the evil factor. And I like how this monster movie treats it that way. It's a little bit like Frankenstein or even The Creature. It's just misunderstood and there's nothing really violent about it. Which maybe we could give it add a little bit to if we're, you know, moving towards that transformation and there's more alligator personality coming out because they're a bit snappy.
They are.
Unlike the ones in this one. I think they were heavily drugged.
Heavily drugged.
Yeah. I mean, actors were literally tripping over them. Like, a lot of the times I was like, because they're using real gators. This is 1959. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you can really spot a fake one, but occasionally.
Yes, you can.
Well, there was one, she chipped over one. I didn't know it was there until it opened its mouth.
Yeah.
I'm like, holy shit. I'm like, these actors are actually in real jeopardy.
They really are committed to this movie that was, as you said, independent, and they still committed as far as they did was really impressive.
Yeah.
Right. And there's that one scene where the two sort of assistants are picking up the alligator.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. That one guy who was doing most of the work, he was pretty skinny.
He was.
And handling some pretty big gators.
That was actually probably the most interesting part of the movie to me, is watching them handle these real, live, very dangerous creatures. Mm-hmm. I mean, they obviously were well fed, right? So that they weren't feeling aggressive and probably drugged.
Yeah, more than likely.
Yeah.
They seemed pretty lethargic.
Yes, they did.
Their heart wasn't into it.
Really wasn't. That's a good segue to sort of the precept of the whole alligator people, actually, with our mad scientist. Because this is Mad Scientist film 2. There's a lot happening in this movie where he's come up with this theory that he can cure people using reptile DNA because they are able to regenerate limbs and heal massive trauma with little to no scarring.
I was always fascinated. Like, I was surprised. I didn't know this movie existed, but as a Spider-Man fan, that's what Kirk Connors did, right? Yeah. And that was 1963, so I have a feeling that was inspired by this movie rather than the other way around. Chicken and the egg and all that.
Yeah.
But it was always, like, I remember thinking about that particular comic book. I'm like, what a great movie that would make.
Yeah.
Like, just, I mean, eventually they did do the lizard movie with Amazing Spider-Man.
Yes.
And not that great. But the idea of using amphibians and lizards who can regrow their tails or whatever to help regrow limbs for injuries and lost limbs and just quicker healing or whatever. And they open this movie on the train And a crucial part of the backstory with Paul Webster is he met his wife in the VA hospital, and he was in a plane crash, and he was every mangled and bones broken or whatever. But when she met him, he was fine. Like, there's no scars. When they're on the train, she's like, "You're probably more handsome than you ever were."
Yeah.
And that already gets your brain moving as like, well, what's going on here? Like, but again, as Sam said, the title kind of spoils a lot of the story mm-hmm. for you.
It really does. And I think that would be one thing that we would need to figure a new title for it, to give it a, make the mystery more mysterious.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. So when you get to that point, it's like, oh, wow, that really happening.
Terror in the Bayou.
Yeah, something as hokey as that would even work better.
Oh, it still feels very 50s.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Swamp scientists?
Swamp scientists, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
I like something with
Swamp
Bayou.
Swamp people.
Gumbo.
Gumbo. I was like, we just had that successful horror movie, Crawl,
yeah.
with an alligator in the horror mm-hmm. movie. So if you didn't see the trailer, you could still have an idea without entirely giving away, but the trailer certainly gives it away. And that's the thing, like, how do yeah. you sell a horror movie like this without actually showing some of that?
Scales? I don't know.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah.
It's not bad. Nice. Snap.
Snap. Oh, yeah. Scales. Yeah. Snap. Yeah. Like, something really kind of
yeah.
alligator-y, but not alligator.
I wonder yeah. if Jaws has been used.
I wonder.
I have a sneaking suspicion.
Oh, all right. Well, let's.
Back in my head.
Speaking of trailers, let's go to this trailer right now.
Inside this strange, forbidding plantation, on the edge of the death-laden bayous, there is a horror beyond belief. A scientist turns his cobalt rays on the revolting, scaly monarchs of the swamps to transform men into hideous, living gargoyles whose faces must be forever hidden from human sight.
He didn't have to hit him. Quick and simplest way, Doctor.
But these are people. You don't handle them like animals.
Beverly Garland, as the unwelcome visitor, haunted by the fear that the man she loves has become one of them.
What are you doing?
I'm not leaving here, Mrs. Hawthorne, until I get the answers to the questions that brought me here. What have you done with my husband?
Lon Chaney, as the hook-armed, hate-maddened Cajun.
I'll kill you, alligator man! Just like I'd kill any four-legged gator!
Suspense that will clutch you like quicksand. Pulling you down into bottomless depths of suffocating horror.
And we're back. I love the 50s trailers. At least this one had some narrative. I was a little worried we were going to get nothing but those words flashing on the screen, and I'm going to have to read it
yeah.
while the music's playing.
Yeah.
I love those trailers to watch, but yeah, they're not
pod-friendly. Yeah. No.
Not unless they have the voiceovers like going, intense, devastating, terror.
It still had a lot of that, though, at least at the early yeah. part of it. I got a little worried when I first listened to that trailer, and it's just music, those words popping up, and some... Now, I gotta say, as far as fan challenges go, this was one of the kindest ones. He followed all the yes. rules, like, he found something a little weird,
yes.
which we like weird, but this is a fairly small cast, so it's gonna be fairly easy on us on casting. Fairly simple locations, and he told us where to find the freaking movie.
Yes.
Which is so good. Like, anybody wants to see this movie, it is available for free on YouTube, so check it out. And I do believe yeah. there's a nice HD copy from Scream Factory right now as well, yeah. if you can mm-hmm. find it.
Yeah, but it's definitely worth watching. It's fun, bearing in mind that it's 1959 on a really low budget,
mm-hmm.
and it does look
hokey.
But with real alligators. Yeah. Yeah, and there's some hokiness to it, but it's fun.
Paul Webster's alligator face, I didn't think that looked too bad. The one at the end sure did.
Oh, yeah.
But it's the scaliness, it's like, well, yeah, yeah, it looks not great by today's standards, but it doesn't look too bad by 59 standards, I got a little frustrated near the later half, near the end of the film, really, where he's laying on the table for the radiation therapy to hopefully get cured. It's just his hands and his head that have the makeup on. It does seem to be fairly well blended, but it just... there's this hairy chest. I'm like, ah.
Yeah. Oh, and let's talk about the hokey laser beam.
Right?
Yes.
That was done on film. They obviously had like literally put it on the frame, each individual frame while they were doing it. And it was actually a frozen frame for the alligator.
Yes. It was a still for a while. I was like, oh, is it shot? Like, my movie?
I actually thought it was like some... taxidermied gator that was sitting on the table when they had that scene.
Yeah, but there's one point where the mouth moves.
Yeah, it does. So he just wasn't moving. I think he was very lethargic.
Yeah.
It sort of swallows a bit. I'm like, oh, wait, no, that's a real gator. Okay.
Yeah. And for a while there, I thought they had made the switch as well. I really, there was like one scene where I think it was Manon who walked past a gator, and it was clearly a really badly faked gator. The mouth opens up. And that was really the only time I remember like a real fake gator in the background somewhere. Most of the time they used real gators.
Yeah, because they all moved. They moved out of the way. If they got bumped, they hissed.
Yeah.
It was
the end scene has a fake one.
Oh, yes. Yeah. There was a fake one there.
Yeah, and we'll get to the end because there's a J trigger at the end.
Oh, Trish already knows what that is, I'm sure. Fuck's sake.
But we'll wait till we get to it.
Yeah, we'll wait till we get to it. But but I want you to anticipate it.
Okay, I was about to say, too, there was one other thing that when we were talking about the nuance of the film and like PTSD, it just made me think of when you talk about Lon Chaney Jr.'s character, Manon, he can't get past the hand thing.
Very Captain Hook.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, very and Peter Pan, Captain Hook, when you think about it. An alligator took his hand?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Let's get into the cast here. Actually, first we'll get about the story here. The story was written by Charles O'Neill, who wrote The Seventh Victim, which I actually just talked about in our most recent 31 Days of Horror. I watched it for 31 Days of Horror. It was a very interesting and clever film. Another one called Cry of the Werewolf. The story and screenplay was by Orville H. Hampton, and he wrote Rocket Ship XM and The Atomic Submarine. God, I love 50s movies.
At least the titles.
Right? And uncredited was Robert M. Fresco, who wrote Tarantula, and more importantly, episode 31, we talked about him, one of my favorites, The Monolith Monsters.
I missed that. I didn't go very deep this time.
That's fine.
The impetus of this whole thing.
I will do this for you. This was directed by Roy DeRuth, and he directed the Ziegfeld Follies in 1945, the original Maltese Falcon in 1931. At least I think it was not the famous one with Bogart. And Phantom of the Rue Morgue. Pretty cool. He's got a lot of cool stuff in his resume, and probably some not so cool stuff, because these guys were directing like 3 or 4 films in a year.
At least, yes.
Yeah. Some of these guys had massive resumes just because they were doing so much.
Well, it was so hard doing research because like, every one of them had like 170, 209 credits. Like, oh man, I'm going to miss something.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure I did too. But if we did, you guys can throw it in the comments somewhere. Starring Beverly Garland as Joyce Webster, a.k.a. Jane Marvin, and she was in the original Not of This Earth, which we may cover someday because it's been remade a couple of times. DOA, also been remade, the original one. Swamp Woman, and It Conquered the World.
And she is still working.
Yeah, she's actually one of the few of this cast that's still around, and she's still going. She's huge body of work.
Yes, it's amazing.
Yeah, and you can see her skill on camera. She's by far the most talented actor within this cast.
Oh, unquestionably. And it's good because she's really the central figure of the whole movie.
Mm-hmm. And it's weird because she doesn't have a whole lot of really big things, but they're certainly interesting things.
Yes.
Clearly, if she's still working, people love her out there. Bruce Bennett they did this in order of appearance, was one of the psychologists at the opening part of the film, the kind of bridge sequence, and he was Dr. Eric Lorimer, and he was in the original Sahara and Angels in the Outfield, which has also been remade.
Yeah, there's a lot of movies actors in this that we might be talking about again.
Yeah, it's interesting. We haven't actually done them yet, but...
Yeah, but, I mean, there's so many. I mean, eventually we'll get to them, but...
Yeah, there's lots and lots of stuff out there, and we'll get to them eventually. Lon Chaney Jr. was Manon. We've talked about him a whole bunch. Mm-hmm. I'm not even sure if I caught them all, but... Episode 47.
High Noon Outlander.
That's right.
Or Outland, sorry.
Trish and I talked about him again in episode 60.
I missed this one last time. I didn't this time.
That's right. It was Abbott Costello Meet Frankenstein. Episode 171.
1 million BC.
And episode 209, which is very recent.
Oh, that was the Wolfman.
That was the Wolfman just this past October. Yes. I'm not sure if there were any other ones. I feel like I still miss stuff, but
you know, I do too. Every time we talk about him,
yeah.
And last time I did because I missed the Abbott and Costello episode, but I think that is.
I think we covered it. Okay, yeah. Sam didn't find any more, so that's good. George McCready was Dr. Mark Sinclair. Most people were very familiar with him, just saying Mark all the time rather than Dr. Sinclair. It was weird because it was Beverly Garland, her Joyce Webster. She kept introducing herself as Mrs. Paul Webster a lot. To the point where I was just like, oh, come on already. You have your own name. You don't take the first name of the person you married. Maybe this was a 50s, 60s thing. Maybe this is an older traditional thing. But she kept introducing herself as Mrs. Paul Webster, and it was really starting to tick me off. Somebody make a supercut.
Yeah.
Because it happened a lot.
But it really was. Like, I remember hearing about this, like, Mrs. first name, last name. That's what happened a lot. Like, I heard my mother say that.
Yeah,
with my father's name.
And you see it in some of these older movies, quite frequently in these older movies.
Mm-hmm. Well, back to George McCready here, who played Dr. Mark Sinclair. He was in The Monster and the Ape and Tora, 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 which might be one of the more famous ones.
And The Big Clock.
Oh, I missed that.
Yep, episode 152.
Nice, good one, Sam. That's one I always look for and missed it.
It happens.
Yeah. Frieda Einescort was Mrs. Lavina Hawthorne, and she was in Return of the Vampire with Bela Lugosi and the She-Creature. Now, she had a cane in this movie. She comes off really mean at the beginning and stern. She's actually the alligator person, Paul Webster's character's mom. She was real life suffering from MS at this point. And it was, I guess, starting to show on screen, but I thought she was getting around pretty good, even with the cane. I kept thinking, well, you don't need that.
Yeah, and I think, in some cases, it's there as a security measure, because that's with MS, it's like all of a sudden you do become weak.
Yeah.
Right? And then you do need the cane.
So I think she did a pretty good job, considering what she was going through, for sure. Richard Crane was Paul Webster, and he was the husband that went missing, and the guy who went through the big treatment, and he's afraid to see his wife because of the mutations that are happening, and when she finds him again, he's fairly scaly.
Yeah, and this was his performance was the most phoned-in performance of all of them, I think.
Well, and trying to, like, he was trying to put on this weird voice under the makeup, and the makeup didn't move very great, so it's not very expressive as
exactly,
well. I'm not sure, you know.
But even when you first see him on the on the train, he's
not great.
He wasn't great. He's got a big body of work.
Yeah, he certainly does. He was in this one. I only wrote down one, but I thought I love the title of this movie: "The Woman They Almost Lynched."
I love it. That's you got to put that down on our list for our planned Patreon episodes.
Yes.
Because that is genius.
Yes. I know all three of us are making up plots for this movie as we speak. And Douglas Kennedy was the other shrink at the beginning of the movie. He was in The Amazing Transparent Man from 1960. I wonder what that's a ripoff of.
I wonder.
I don't know.
No idea.
Yeah. But he was also in episode 194 of Us.
Invaders from Mars.
Invaders from Mars. I think, Trish, were you around for that one?
Don't think I was.
Oh, yes. I think you were on hiatus.
I've seen Invaders from Mars, but I don't think I was there for the episode.
Yeah, I think you were missing for that one. So that rounds out the cast, but they do, I couldn't find this actor's name, but there's another actor who actually has lines, and as I mentioned before, the butler for Miss Lavina Hawthorne, Frieda Einescort, was the character's name was Toby, and I did cast him. We'll get to that later, but I did cast him because I thought he was important enough to be in there, and I thought we maybe could have some fun with that character. So,
and the maid has lines too. She does actually.
That's
kind
true.
Of give her
I forgot to write her down as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't cast him, but I have now.
I have now as well.
Just mental casting, because you're right. He is an important character, and because I just cast the first appeared typically, or the first page of the IMDb.
Yeah, he might not be a butler of mine, but we'll see. Now, we'll just round out the plot of this one here. Dr. Sinclair is looking for a cure for Mark and the others that he helped, these veterans that he helped. He is looking for a cure and has been experimenting. And Manon picks up this box at the train station and at the same time also picks up Joyce. Because she's like, hey, I'm going where this box is going. You're going to take me there. But the doctor's going to use this, what it was called, Cobalt 19, I do believe. Cobalt 60. Yeah. Cobalt. I got COVID-19 in my head. Yes. COVID-19. So it's Cobalt 60.
Which was also the name of an ongoing comic in Heavy Metal magazine.
Oh, I did not know that.
Nice.
So he's going to use heavy radiation to experiment. He's months and months away, as far as, if not years. But he's had some success with X-rays, so he's going to use something a little more drastic with this Cobalt 60. Which I just assume is a fictional thing. He's talking about gamma radiation, which is very lethal.
Yeah.
It won't turn you into a Hulk, but it might turn you into alligators. Yeah. I don't know.
I want to just point out the irony of this, is that he's already started human testing with reptile DNA with no care, but now he's going to take possibly months to test
the
cure.
Suddenly he's going to do it the right way. Yes. Well, he's seeing all the mutations. He's like, wow, man, I'm really bad at this. I need to actually go do the scientific method a little bit better.
Yes.
I think that was the whole point. Like, he's like, oh yeah, no, that's, I charged ahead the first time. I have learned my lesson.
Yeah. So he does feel some guilt.
Yes. I thought that was kind of funny and ironic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'd like to keep the irony of that.
Yeah. And I want to talk a little bit about Manon here. He's kind of the handyman on the ranch, the go-to, the guy who comes and goes and fetches things in town for Mrs. Hawthorne. And yeah, he's a little screw, a little loose, you know, he's a little crazy. He's missing a hand. He really hates gators.
Because he lost a hand to a gator.
Yeah, he'll go out in the middle of the night and take pot shots at him. And
he's a drunkard.
He's a drunkard, which makes him really rapey.
Yep.
His personality makes him really rapey. Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he goes and saves Joyce from the forest. Just the scene before that was she's chasing after Paul back into the bayou and falling a little further behind. She pretty much trips over a gator, doesn't phase her, but the snake really bothers her.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's what Manon saves her from.
And then snake could be poisonous. That's the harder one.
Yeah. So gets her back to
his cabin. House,
but his cabin. And you think he's being nice and protective. And then he's like, oh, you owe me. You owe me something.
Yeah.
He's not really being nice and protective. Because right at the beginning, he's like, I saved your life. I saved your life. Here, have something to drink. No, he was rapey at the beginning.
He out and out says, take your clothes off.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was really shocked by that, given that it was...
Especially 59.
Yeah, I was really shocked by that.
Oh, see, I wasn't.
Yeah, well,
this is 59. Yeah, no, I was not at all surprised by this. 1959, you're like, was I surprised? No.
Well, I was surprised they showed it on screen, because that's really forward for 1959 in terms of sexualization. Yeah. But the fact that he did it was not surprising. So, it's the fact that how transparently they showed it was quite shocking. It made me uncomfortable, which it was supposed to. It's definitely one of the more effective scenes in the movie.
Because Paul's coming to save her. He's getting past his own insecurities about how he looks to save her.
There's that too, yes. She was unconscious, though, because Manon knocked her out.
Yeah.
And there's physical violence against women. Like, it's really, really an uncomfortable scene to watch, certainly by today's standards. And I think it would have been in 1959, too.
It might have been, because, that was the sort of thing you just sort of hid.
Yes. Right. Mm-hmm. And certainly you don't show that on screen. Right. That's the big thing, is that even in an independent film, that's the kind of thing where they kind of hint at it without showing it as graphically as they did. I mean, it's not graphic in the sense of nudity or anything like that, but it's definitely, there's no misconstruing what's happening there.
Mm-hmm. But I think overall, like that scene, like Manon rescues her and then Paul comes back to rescue her from him. So I like how they tell that story, like that threat to her twice. So it makes you think Manon's okay until the cabin scene. And they're like, oh no,
he really is not a good person.
Exactly.
And then Paul comes in, and that kind of cements your sympathetic monster.
Exactly.
As well, that he's still her husband, really. At the end of the day, well, he's embarrassed, and he doesn't want her to see him that way, but he's going to be protective of her as well. And he still can play a mean piano.
Yes.
True, but he was also the reason she was out there in the first place, because he ran away, didn't want her to see him like that.
Yeah.
So it was a whole thing. It's part of, like, he has to get over his ego.
Yeah.
I think that should be part of the film. He has to get over his ego.
Yeah, he put her at risk.
Yeah, like, I mean, she loves him. Like, she's gone to such lengths, and he's still worried about how he looks.
Mm-hmm. You really want to emphasize the selfishness of that character, right? Mm-hmm. And like you said, the ego of the character is like, well, I was this handsome, virile man, now I'm a monster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, the part of you that you're not a monster, like, your humanity is still in there. And that could also be part of where, like, his transformation, he doesn't feel as human as he used to.
Yeah, and I think that's what the voice change he was trying to do was trying to convey, is that he feels less human. Mm. But it wasn't conveyed very well through the story of the film.
Now, yeah. I have a question. With our movie, do you have a time setting you'd like to set this in?
I want to keep it in the 50s.
I kind of do, too. Me the too. Core of it, I just occurred to me, I had a different idea for a bridging sequence.
And I'm open to that.
Yeah, well, I was thinking it wouldn't be Joyce. It might be their daughter instead. So, like, the bridging sequence is, say, 20, 25 years later, and it's the daughter who's recounting this story, or we just, it's a flashback. We could just handle it as a flashback. So we might not even be sure who this person is they're talking to immediately. And it could, maybe not shrinks, but an actual physical exam. And maybe by the end of the movie, we could see those hints of the scales, and then she might have inherited something.
Ooh, I like that.
From Paul. Yeah.
Ooh, can I take it a bit further?
Sure. That's what we're here for.
Where, awesome. part of it is like, yeah, there is a physical exam, but part of what her goal is, even with recounting the story, is she's trying to find a cure for herself and possibly her father, who is she believes is somewhere still alive.
Yeah, I'd like to keep that open because, well, let's face it, we all know I don't like the ending.
Yes.
Oh yeah, no, the quicksand thing, I was like, oh no, I wrote that down, quicksand, because the whole thing is I was created in a world where quicksand seemed more dangerous than it actually was. I don't want quicksand anywhere in the movie.
No, I wrote, like, this is the end of the movie, and I go, quicksand takes Paul. Fuck.
Yeah. I know.
And then he texted me.
I'm like,
when I saw the quicksand, I'm like, oh no.
Oh, quicksand, my old nemesis. Many a conversations over this show about quicksand.
Yes.
How yep. I hate you so. But boy, I grew up really fearing this thing called quicksand that seemed to be everywhere.
Yep. You were just one step away from quicksand at any given point as a child.
And that's why Jay doesn't like the outdoors.
Yeah, this whole self-isolation thing, not new.
No.
No.
Hiking? What's that?
Oh, no, I love hiking.
I know.
It wasn't the flu. It was quicksand.
If there was sand while I'm hiking, staying off the sand.
Except on a beach, because for some reason it didn't seem to be there.
No, I didn't fear the beach because of quicksand. I feared the beach because of Jaws.
Yeah, yeah.
And Blood Beach. The whole beach was a threat.
Yes.
And Blood Beach.
Yeah. For me, it was rivers and piranhas. That was another one of mine.
Oh, yeah. Piranhas as well.
Oh, the
things. There were so much trying to kill us.
Mm-hmm. Now, yeah, this is no Shape of Water, but the love story, we've proven that can work from the original Creature of the Black Lagoon to Shape of Water.
Yes. Yeah, and that's the tricky part, is remaking this so it doesn't feel like we're remaking Shape of Water.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's still underlying story, but I liked how much of a mystery this wound up being, because it was so unusual for a monster movie.
It was really unusual, and I would like to see that sort of continue.
I'd like to add a little more mystery to it. Yeah. Now, when I was thinking about the character Toby, I was a little less comfortable than with a black manservant, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But it is still Louisiana.
In the 50s.
In the 50s, so that would kind of happen. But I kind of wanted to make Toby, because this is a pretty isolated and claustrophobic cast. Like, it's really minimal locations and minimal cast. I kind of wanted to have kind of a voodoo angle, so you're unsure if it was science that did this or a curse that did this. Like, maybe he did work for the family and has cursed the family, and now the family believes it is this voodoo priest is responsible for what happened to Paul.
Oh, you could have so much fun with the mother. She's carrying that cane because she has an alligator leg.
That's kind of fun. Ooh.
Well, yeah, because like she would have undergone the treatments. But I have the other thing, too, where it's probably not the one thing that might be actually saving Paul from going full alligator is the voodoo.
Never go full alligator.
Yeah, never go full alligator.
Yeah, no, I like not, it's the double bluff, right? You think he's responsible.
Evil, yeah, it's a double bluff. And Toby's trying to. Paul.
Yeah, Toby's responsible for slowing it down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
I think that could
because be. Because that's all. Oh, and you could add the other science bit to it where, like, some of the stuff that some of these substances used in voodoo were actually really good at slowing sort of deterioration of cells, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we could do something like that. And I still want to keep the scientist. He's still good, but he and it's still the same story. He's trying to help people recuperate. And yeah, maybe Mrs. Hawthorne had lost that leg. I love that idea. Maybe she's hiding a tail under there.
Nice.
I kind of dig that. Maybe that's why she's so covered up. I mean, it wouldn't be out of the realm for the 50s anyway for to be so covered up, but it is Louisiana. You figure it's pretty warm down there.
But that's a very southern thing.
It's a very southern thing.
Yeah. And she would have been from an earlier generation that would have been dressing like that, right?
Yeah.
But I also like the idea that that's sort of how she came into Dr. Sinclair's orbit, is that she did seek treatment from him. And that's also why she brought him in on her son, because she hadn't, her leg hadn't caused a problem before then. She's like, this is a miracle, doctor. I'm bringing him in for my son.
Yeah, who's dying in the hospital. And she's the one keeping the secret. She's lying. She's got this feud going with Toby. And if she can turn the rest of the denizens of this town, say there's a little bit bigger town and she's one of the richer folks in the town, she's got this estate. Maybe she's manipulating this as and trying to create fear of Toby among the denizens and while trying to keep that secret and keep it, you know, there'd be sightings probably as these things happen, right? So this town's starting to get a little bit of a legend behind it because people are like, they're talking about the alligator people and she's covering it up by deflecting the what's going actually going on.
Oh, and she's trying to, the other part of it too is in trying to find a cure, they might be kidnapping people from the town to experiment on to find the cure, but she's blaming Toby.
And, you know, with modern things with plagues and stuff, they could be fearing sickness rather than this. I mean, the 50s was all about the atomic bomb and radiation scares and things like that. So it's something we far more understand now. And I don't think it works quite as well, but you still need it for, I don't know, the science gobbledygook part of it.
Well, I mean, radiation therapy is still a thing.
Oh, for sure. Right? Absolutely. Right. So the doctor would treat it like a cancer.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of where they were going with it. Mm-hmm. And I don't see needing to change that very much.
No. Right. Like I said, that's something that actually exists, radiation therapy.
Yeah. I kind of like the idea of our quote-unquote mad scientist sort of thinking that through, because he's done tests with x-rays and he's trying ways to slow or stop or reverse the effects of his treatment.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm unsure if we still have Manon charging in because it was him putting people at risk and he gets fired and he's trying to basically get revenge on the doctor and he fucks up the whole experiment because it needs to run for a certain amount of time and that actually furthers the mutation. Mm-hmm. There's also rush. It may have happened anyway, right?
Yes.
So we don't know what that outcome of the radiation therapy with the Cobalt-60 was actually going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure that works anymore, the charging in and fucking up the equipment bit.
No,
that felt weird in the whole movie anyway.
Mm-hmm. I still like him being a horrible person threat. Oh, yeah. And he's part of the horror of the horror movies, is like a really horrible dude. And maybe he's out there for his own gains.
No, I still like the idea of him being the bad guy. But
Well, how do people in the bayou get some highly radioactive material? Like, they're probably going through some dodgy things to do it. And Mrs. Hawthorne, that would kind of add to her
skeeviness.
Yeah.
Right. And Manon's in on it. I mean, that's the whole thing. Is, I mean, he's obviously her henchman, for lack of a better way of putting it. But what if instead of like coming in and busting up the machinery, he comes in after the experiment fails, and instead of and he still chases Paul off into the bayou, but instead of the quicksand, he takes a shot. He's established that he likes to shoot alligators anyhow. He takes a shot at Paul. Paul goes down, and then that's the last you see of him, mm-hmm. right? So that leaves that doubt in your mind that he's whether or not he's dead, and then that feeds your story with your bridge story.
Well, I'm trying to figure out how to. Lines. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how we maneuver Toby back in there now that we've given him a little bit more of a character. Maybe he's the one who takes Joyce in afterwards and has been working with Paul to normalize him.
Yeah, that's the part about changing Toby. That's good. You're right. You have to work that in there somehow.
I kind of want to fight between Toby and Manon because
I
could see Manon having a lot of, you know, ire towards Toby. Like I could see him being very, like kind of, I could have him being racist, very unforgiving.
That
very
plays really well with what one of the things I wanted to add to the whole story.
Well, and I was actually thinking that's kind of a great ending. It takes the shot. We don't see Paul anymore. And Toby comes in to take out Manon, and that's where that fight happens.
And Manon gets eaten by a regular alligator.
Yes.
Because I love irony. Now, one of the things, as I was watching this and thinking about the time frame and all that stuff, is I want, and I cast this way, I cast Joyce as a woman of color. Because that adds that added tension that she's a black woman in a very intolerant society.
That doesn't bother me
It kind of felt like that was happening anyhow.
Yeah, I thought about that a little bit. I didn't cast that way, but it certainly occurred to me. And that's why I wanted to add a little bit more of cultural cast in there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I'm fine with that. That's cool. But when she gets pregnant with the character who's introduced at the beginning of our film, that would obviously happen when they consummate their marriage, right? Yeah. Like when he still looks, Paul still looked relatively normal.
But the child still has those genetics.
Yeah.
And that's, you can even add the fact that she shows up and she, like, cause it's been months. Like it's not, just a few days. It's been months that she's finally reached
there. Yeah, so we can make it like three or 4 months in. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the idea of her actually being so showing and it being a mixed race baby.
So that would add a little more drama and character to it. Yeah. And Mrs. Hawthorne does come off as somebody who would be horribly racist. Like that's she's got why the I went town that way. Under her thumb. She's doing shady shit. She's got her own mutations. She's hiding. Like she's just as monstrous in this. And now we have to have Paul reconcile that with his mom, who's not a good person either. And he's got to turn on his own family for the love of his wife.
Well, and he left because he couldn't deal with what his mother was doing.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that's why he is gone, because he fell in love with somebody that his mother would absolutely not approve of.
And he's forced to go back because of what his mom had done to him to save his life.
Yeah, exactly. It gives the story a whole bunch of depth.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's just so resentful of her for that, plus many other reasons. Mm-hmm. This was just like the last straw.
And these elements are kind of there in the original film. We're just taking them further. Yeah.
And that's exactly what sort of fed my thought was you could see it there. You could see that she, because of Toby and the female servant, you could see that she was a throwback.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you're Southern and you have your black servants. And sure, it's uncomfortable. And I mean, I was thinking about the Jordan Peele film, not Us, the other one.
Get Out?
Get Out, yes. Sorry, the name escaped me for a while there. It kind of gave me that feel with the house and her attitude and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of lean into that a little bit.
Oh, well, Jordan Peele would be really good director for this.
The thought did cross my mind.
In fact, I might just leave it there because I just looked at my list and I'm like, oh, I knew I forgot something. Mm-hmm. And I had forgot my director. So it'll be Jordan Peele. Yeah, spoilers. Okay.
Yeah, my casting's still along where I wanted it, kind of comedic, so it's going to be a little different. So.
I felt like this could lean into a little more humor if you wanted to, because when we did Airplane and what was the original called?
Flight.
Total blankout. I know.
I don't know. Go look for our Airplane episodes. Zero Hour. Yeah. It's called Zero Hour.
Yeah.
And how they took that movie and just completely comedicized it and made it ridiculous for Airplane. Like, I don't know if I want to go that far, but I did cast in a way where humor could be injected into the plot.
And as did I. Actually, I very much did.
But at the same time, you don't have to. And these actors are certainly capable without having to throw it in. But I think it should be a little tongue-in-cheeky. Sam Raimi would also be good for this, I think.
Yes.
In fact, I think that was what I actually originally had in mind was Sam Raimi.
I went,
but I couldn't figure out where to put Ted.
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah, that,
you can
that's
have him as just a villager.
Yeah, he's the alligator wrestler.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, he does his cameos because there are lots of background characters.
He's one of the guys in white t-shirts who's working at the lab.
Oh, speaking of guys in white t-shirts, what about the guy with the sleeve cut off?
Oh yeah. I have so many questions about those guys.
Even in the '50s, you gotta go to the gun show.
Yeah. It's like yeah, you really look like a guy who's a professional orderly. Yeah. You got it going on, buddy.
You're like, you didn't have any other white shirts, huh? Yeah. They were clearly had to dress with their old wardrobe.
Yeah, it's like, okay, this is gonna fit him unless we cut off the sleeves, yeah.
Which professional wrestlers would you put in these roles? John Cena should be one of them.
Triple H,
yeah. Dave Bautista, there's lots of them.
You don't want to use ones that are actually getting good roles.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, Dave Bautista showed up on my list at one point, but then I went another way.
But it would be funny to use like fairly recognizable wrestlers that aren't actual actors in those parts so they don't have to have lines.
Who were the guys who played, they were in Hobbs and Shaw? They were Hobbs's brothers?
Hobbs's brothers? One of them was his cousin, actually.
Yeah.
His character name is Roman Reigns in WWE. He's an actual cousin. He's the only one who's actually related to The Rock. The rest of them were cast.
There were two wrestlers that were like brothers, weren't they? And they played, they're in the background. They don't even think they have lines.
I think Roman Reigns was the only wrestler I knew.
Oh, okay.
But
I'll look it up.
Yeah, there could have been others. He does have other cousins that are in the WWE, so... I don't remember. I don't watch enough wrestling.
Yeah. Okay. But anyway, I got us off on track. Let's get back on track.
WWE scared me away by being constantly shitty.
Yes.
Yeah. So this is why we're giving them work in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the idea of the big hulking orderlies. Yeah. That's especially if they're manhandling alligators.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Right.
Totally. Anything else you want to add to this movie? I think we kind of got our angles, at least our broad strokes in there.
Yeah, and I like the idea, like you said, of sightings of alligator people.
Mm-hmm.
They're living in this house, and they go out at night to sort of just because they're cooped up, right? Mm-hmm. So I'd love to have sort of these like brief glimpses of them.
Yeah, no, it'd be interesting to see if like the mainland part of where they live, where you know the train station is and whatnot, has these little touristy things like a Bigfoot sighting, or when you go to Roswell, right? Yeah. Like
lizard people.
Part of it adds to the lore, but at the same time demystifies it and makes you not take it too seriously. Yeah,
exactly. So and you can she's even have actually, joy seeing one of these brochures or signs or something like that.
Yeah, so that's how she handled it, was adding flames to the fire of like, hey, you should sell stuffies to children, alligators to children or whatever.
There was one other thing I kind of wanted. You know, in sort of the middle, he comes in and plays the piano in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then she sees like all those wet footprints. Like that one kind of scene, I'm like, oh, if I could have like elongated that into like maybe a couple of more instances, like just to build that tension and that mystery of her like looking for Paul. I don't know how you do it, but I was like, I loved that little moment where she's like, what's happening? And it's so weird and mysterious.
Yeah, I'd love her to like run to the door, sliding glass door or whatever, and rather than catch a glimpse of Paul, who may be running the other way off screen, you see an alligator slipping into the bayou or something.
Yeah, subtleties like that. Yeah.
Just subtleties where you're unsure what you just saw.
Yeah. Oh, and that was the other thing I wanted to mention too, is the fact that Mrs. Hawthorne had locked her in her room. And that was really where my whole thought process came from about the whole racism and cultural thing, is the fact that she was locked in her room.
Mm-hmm. And that adds to that quite a bit because it was the maid who said, well, you can't send her back into town because she goes, asks questions and is turned away by Mrs. Hawthorne and tells Manon, take her straight back to town. And then it's the maid who chimes up, or maybe it was the butler. I can't remember who chimed up. It was like, well, you can't send her back. Like the train doesn't come back till tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah.
And so she does the right thing and puts her up.
Yeah, and that's and then locks her in.
Yeah, right? And locks her in, but it makes even more sense if the underlying racism is there.
Exactly. I don't want this person walking around my house unattended.
Yeah.
Right? I love Joyce's response to most of this, where she's like, well, I don't have much of a choice now, do I? She doesn't say yes. She's mm-hmm. like, well, I'm not being given a choice, which mm-hmm. adds to that. You could keep those lines in there and it'll really work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's good. I mean, she does. She could still send her back into town and you get a fucking hotel in town. But she doesn't do that.
Nope.
Nope. And I think it's because her granddaughter, I think we've decided, is there. Is like, okay, well, there is something still there. You know, that's my grandchild inside her.
Yeah, and that could sort of start a redemption arc for Hawthorne as well, is the fact that she's like overcoming her own innate racism and prejudices to accept.
Which we kind of do see in the film.
We do, and that's why I'm like, well, wait a minute, that could work really well, because she's like, well, I have a grandchild.
Yeah, she does eventually give it up and becomes more maternal after that, after she just spills everything and is tired of keeping the secret.
Yeah, and because her reasons aren't malicious, they're altruistic, but they're misguided. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole beauty of this film, is the only person in this movie who's truly bad is Manon. Everybody else is just misguided.
Yeah, no, she's, well, I mean, I think we've made Mrs. Hawthorne a lot more greedy and underhanded in this movie, but at the same time, she's still trying, ultimately, in her own mind, a good person trying to protect her son.
Her son and the other people that have been affected, yeah.
Yeah, and she's trying to overcome her own racism throughout this story because of it as well.
Yeah.
She's sort of gotten fed this otherness where, like, she's not what she would think of as pure and real anymore. She's part crocodile. So now she has to come to terms with that.
And maybe this also becomes where she makes peace with Toby, our kind of whodun character.
Yeah, I'd like that, because I think Toby sees who she could be all the way through the movie. He's like, well, because he knew her before this all started happening. And it's like, well, the hate in her doesn't need to be there. Mm-hmm. I can help her.
Well, I think the hate was in her before. I think it's like once the crocodile thing happens, she's sort of gotten worse, but it's self-hatred. But that's sort of what he can see, is she's got that redemption in her after the damaging accident of her leg.
Yeah, and I think that before her accident, she at least treated her servants and other people with at least decency versus...
See, I would see that as the opposite. Whereas she didn't before, because she didn't have any reason to after the accident.
But you have to give Toby some motivation for wanting to redeem her somehow.
Well, I
do, but that's because after the accident, he doesn't want her to get any worse. He doesn't want Paul to get any worse.
I think we need a source of her hate, and maybe there was some sort of accident on her land, because we don't know where Paul's father is.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's just mom. And that's just it. We can use that backstory, and maybe the father was killed and that's where she was injured and why we can replace her leg.
Yes.
And maybe that's where the hate comes in, because maybe it was an accident that happened with one of the servants, and that is also the source of her racism.
Yeah. Well, I think she's always been a racist because she's in the South. Society. And I think that's what you were getting at, Trish, is that she's always being prejudiced. But I see her having sort of been at least civil and treating her servants fairly until this accident, which she blames on Toby.
Yeah, and that's maybe why Toby's not there anymore, is because she blames Toby for what happened to her husband.
Yes.
So it's a weird cycle.
Yes.
Which I kind of dig. Now it's gone from mom to son, and the son's trying to not be his mom.
Well, he isn't his mom. I mean, he genuinely loves Joyce.
Yeah.
And I think he also was really, he thought of Toby as someone, as part of the family.
Yeah.
I believe.
Sure, he would have been raised by Toby. Yeah.
And he knows that the accident was his own father's fault. Mm-hmm. His father was ultimately responsible for what happened to himself and his mother.
Yeah. I kind of have a whole backstory where his father was kind of a drunk, and he didn't like, Paul didn't really like him that much.
Oh, my gosh.
So he wasn't that
lots of drama.
Manon and his dad were drinking buddies.
Yes. And that's a whole thing. And like, the mother just kept Manon on just because she was used to him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because she thought that's what her husband would have wanted.
Well, and because Manon does the dirty work that she doesn't want to do.
Yeah.
Right? Because that distance makes her feel not as bad as she about should what she's do. Doing. It gives her that distance. Yeah. Right? That's why bad guys have henchmen, to do the dirty work so you don't have to feel bad about it.
Yeah, cool. They don't have to antibacterial their hands.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we're ready for casting here, but before that, and there's a scene I wanted to share because I thought it was kind of hilarious. It was full of melodrama, and this is coming out of the lab, and it's Joyce talking to Dr. Sinclair about the radiation treatment and his huge overacting in the scene.
Yes.
Is there any hope for the people?
There may be a possible chance, but a slight one. Shot in the dark and very dangerous. Your husband insists upon taking that chance tonight.
What is it?
Massive radiation. Gamma rays from a cobalt bomb combined with high-intensity X-ray. We've already noted in Paul definite positive reactions to X-ray treatment. But what will happen with this, I don't know.
I want to be here.
I don't think that's wise.
I want to be here. I want to see Paul. I want to talk to him before... You can't keep me away, Doctor.
No, I guess I can't. Maybe I haven't even got the right.
Okay, I think we are ready for some recasting here. Sam, why don't you start us off, and then we'll go to Trish.
That sounds good to me.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to start off because you were so proud of your casting. I'll leave you for last.
Well, I wouldn't say proud. I just cast it.
Oh, you built it up.
Did I really?
I really did.
Okay, well, then I better be good.
Yeah, you better be good. So I'll start this one off because I usually pull the tail on this anyway. Now, my casting obviously isn't indicative of what we just talked about because... We have our own ideas before we come on the show and do this, so unfortunately I do have a white girl as Joyce, but I went with Emilia Clarke from Game of Thrones and Solo, A Star Wars Story. It's not as bad as you think, and Terminator Genesis, also not as bad as you think.
Oh, I really liked that one, actually.
I thought so, too.
I love the way they twisted it on its ear.
I did. I liked it.
It's just a reworking and worth it.
Yeah. Now, for Manon, I wanted that size... that Lon Chaney Jr. has, but I also was thinking, you know, multicultural cast as well, and maybe where I could use this to lean into some comedy if I wanted to, and using somebody who's known for comedy in a non-comedic role sometimes really works, and so I used Tyler Perry, who has done, like, Gone Girl outside of those horrendous Madea movies.
I like the movies he's in that don't have Tyler Perry's in front of it.
Yes. Yeah, like he actually is a very good talent when he's in a non-Tyler Perry Presents comedy role.
When somebody else is managing him.
Yeah. Yes. So I thought he might work in this part. For Paul Webster, Joyce's husband, I went with Gabriel Luna from Terminator Dark Fate, and he was Ghost Rider in a couple seasons of S.H.I.E.L.D. And Terminator Dark Fate, not as bad as you think.
This is maybe your casting, not as bad as you think.
Not as bad as you think. Our new t-shirt.
The more you know tone after that every time. Do-do-do.
Not as bad as you think. And for Dr. Sinclair, I went with Richard E. Grant from Gosford Park and Hudson Hawk.
Yes, one of my favorite actors. I love Richard E. Grant.
Yeah, for Mrs. Hawthorne, because I was thinking of actors of a certain age now, I thought Gina Davis would really be good in this role, and it goes back to a different body horror movie of The Fly that she was in. So it's a bit of a nod as well.
I do like that.
For Toby, I went with Delroy Lindo from Get Shorty and Gone in 60 Seconds.
I like that.
When you can't get Sam Jackson.
Yes.
You go with Delroy Lindo. I thought that was pretty cool. I could totally imagine him as being like a kind of a voodoo dude.
Wasn't he in The Devil's Advocate?
Yes, he was.
Yep.
He was in Devil's Advocate. When we still had psychologists, I guess these might be doctors now, so this in-joke is kind of gone away, but I actually cast two people who were psychologists on different shows. I used Lorraine Bracco from The Sopranos as Dr. McGregor, and Kelsey Grammer as Dr. Lorimer, who they're kind of gone out of our script anyway,
but
we just... the cameo people at this point, whoever we use. But I just thought it would be fun to do people who were actually shrinks on other shows.
Yeah, I was lazy on that casting, but it was still fun.
I wasn't even going to cast them, and then I'm like, ah, fuck it, I'll put them in here just for shits and giggles.
Ditto, and that's why it's kind of lazy casting.
Yeah, it's total lazy casting, but I had fun with it. Okay, Trish, why don't you go next here? And we already know who my director was. Either Sam Raimi or Jordan Peele.
And I thought about him as well. So, like, he's my backup one.
Sure.
So, for my Joyce Webster, the reason I went with her is because, like, the woman who played Joyce Webster in the original, she reminded me of her so much. It's actually Gemma Chan is who I put as Joyce. So, again, like, a different casting, but not, somebody from somewhere else. So, not black, but other. So, the racism still works.
Yeah, no, that still works. Where's she from? Like,
She's British. She's been in a number of shows. I think she was in, that one where the robots are in your house. What was the name of it? Yeah, it was a whole thing with have they become sentient. It's not Westworld, but it was like a British version. She's been in like the IT crowd as like smaller parts. She's done quite a bit right now. She's really good. There was a whole thing where she played a British aristocrat from like a historical film. And people were like, well, she's Asian and the woman wasn't Asian. I'm like, well, fuck you. You do that flip all the time. So let's do it this time. Cool. So she's quite good. And she looks brilliant.
I got to find that whole robot thing.
Sounds interesting.
Find out where that is.
I'm trying to remember. I'll send you the link to it.
Cool.
And then for Paul Webster, I went with Matt McCooey. And he plays a DCI Bill Wong in the Agatha Raisin series that I've been binging.
Okay.
I think he's just delightful, and he's kind of pretty, so I'd hate to see him under makeup, but that's just what's going to happen now.
Yeah, I was looking when I was casting for Paul, I was looking for somebody who had an unusual face structure, but still kind of handsome. And that's kind of why I landed on Gabriel Luna, because he's got a long face already, and that would probably work really well with the makeup.
Yeah, and I think Matt McCooey will as well. Like, he's also I'd love to see, like, he's charming, but have him have that whole thing where, like, he's used to his face, but there's still more going on. For my Dr. Sinclair, I went a weird way. I was, for some reason, thinking a whole thing where they were doing the alligator DNA, because they're like, dragons were real. They were just humans and alligators together. So I went with a Welsh actress, Ruth Jones from Gavin and Stacey. I thought she would be funny. I went very comedic with this, but she could be straight for this. Could play it straight.
Right.
So we got Dr. Sinclair with Ruth Jones. Lavinia Hawthorne, Helen McCrory. She played Malfoy's mom in the Harry Potter series. And she's also part of the harrowing in the Inside Number 9 episode. She was very good in that. Menon, I went with Billy Zane.
Oh, he'd be good.
I like that.
I thought that would be fun. And then with Toby.
I hate these podunk motherfucking alligators.
Right? Like after the Tales from the Crypt movie, I'm like, I would love to see him do that. Because, he could be like really menacing, but also stupidly charming.
Go watch that Tales from the Crypt movie.
Demon Knight,
Go watch Demon Knight if you didn't get my joke.
Yes. If Knight only for that scene, because the rest of it's kind of meh.
Oh, fuck off. That movie's awesome.
It is.
Great movie. And then for Toby, I went, like, because I thought a creepy butler would be awesome. Noel Fielding.
That definitely adds to the funny,
It adds to the funny. And as his, like, counterpoint, as also the maid, I didn't remember the maid's name, but Issa Rae, she's done Insecure and a number of other shows. There's a movie called The Photograph that's got her in it, so she can do a lot of comedy. So I thought her and Noel Fielding would be kind of a fun.
That'd be cool if you put the comedy within the servants,
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So for the two doctors at the beginning, I had Sheridan Smith and Miranda Hart, because again, I was leaning into the comedy. And for my director, Richard Ayoade. That's who I had.
Well, if you're leaning into the comedy, that's a good way to go.
Yeah, like this film could easily just take everything from the original film and just turn it up to 11, and like Airplane did, and you'd be fine, because there's plenty of scenes you could just totally make fun of.
Yes.
And with the Noel Fielding whole thing, like, we've got the Mighty Boosh, and Benny and the Bull, like the visual style of that added to this movie would be very interesting, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's pretty cool.
Thanks.
Yeah, that was a fun direction.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yay.
An entirely British cast in the bayou.
Yes. I love watching British actors do Southern accents. There we go. It's so much fun.
It is, especially if you're doing comedy, because they're going to be so bad.
Yeah, if you're going to go comedy, then it kind of works. You remember Congo?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, fuck. let's just cast everybody who has an accent to do an accent that isn't theirs.
Yes.
And all the people who don't have accents get the accents as well. Absolutely. Man, that movie's a fucking nightmare.
I have yet to see it all the way through.
God damn it. Okay. Anyway, Sam. we've uncovered a new trauma outside of quicksand.
Yes.
We have. We really have.
Okay, so my Joyce. I'll start with my Joyce, as we all did. I cast Lupita Nyong'o.
Awesome.
Because she's amazing, and I've never cast her, so I felt comfortable doing it. For my Paul, I cast Zachary Levi.
Nice.
Because he's got that long face like Jay was talking about, that I wasn't thinking about, but he's also, because he's gotten kind of big for his
Shazam
roles, I kind of, the idea of him being sort of turning into that alligator and gaining that muscle mass, I like kind of like the visual of that.
It's hard to tell how much he did put on, because that was a very padded suit.
It was a very padded suit, but he did put on quite a bit, apparently. So for my Miss Hawthorne, I cast Renee Rousseau.
Along the lines I was going for. That she's perfect.
She's the right age, and she's
She can be menacing if she wants to be.
She can be very menacing if she wants to be. But she can also be very kind and gentle if she wants to be. Yeah. That's kind of where I went there.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. For my Dr. Sinclair, I went with Nathan Fillion. Nice. That's where I was getting my comedy from, was the doctor.
That's good.
For my Manon, I went with Christopher Maloney.
Oh, yes.
Happy.
Oh, nice. I like it. I can see it now.
He's the truck driver.
I can see it now.
The tow truck driver.
Because he's getting really, he's really big, but not overweight big. He's just big. And he does drunk really well.
Yes, he does.
And he does comedy really well. I just watched the second season of Happy. This is the only casting that's sort of informed by stuff I've been watching.
I've been holding off on it because I know I'm just going to binge it. So.
Oh, totally did. Yeah. Totally did. It is bat shit. I love it.
Well, if you've seen him in Harold and Kumar, he really does know comedy.
Yeah, keep sending your tweets to Netflix, because there's a whole Save Happy thing. Like, I'm surprised it waited this long for it to land on Netflix, because it's been canceled for like a year.
Yes.
So it's been gone for a while already, and now the Save Happy campaign's going.
Yeah, because it's finally on Netflix.
Yeah. Right? So apparently nobody has stars.
No. For my doctors Lorimer and McGregor, I cast Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Zachary Quinto.
Zachary Quinto.
Haha, nice.
That'd be a good pairing.
Yeah, I thought it'd be a fun pairing. And again, they have such small parts in the film, and you could move them around in the film however you wanted to.
Yeah, right? Totally.
And then for my director, I went a little out to left field on this one. I used a director who's just got one film under her belt called Darlin. Her name is Pollyanna McIntosh.
Cool.
She's mostly an actress, but this her first feature film is getting good reviews, and I watched the trailer, and I like her sense of visual. So I'm like,
cool.
I could see that working really well with this type of story. If we go to sort of the darker, more serious tone that we had sort of worked out, not so much for the comedy, because she tends to be more serious, but she's also got a sense of humor, because she was in Happ and Leonard and played this absolutely nuts punk rocker assassin chick. So she does have a sense of humor.
Yeah, I don't know why. I don't see any reason why you can't have both in the movie, right? Like, just a good sense of balance, because it is a ridiculous story. So,
like, black comedy would totally work with
that. Yeah, and that's kind of, I think, where we've ended up, is more in the black comedy rather than the over-the-top comedy. But, you have to have fun. I mean, any good horror film has those moments of lightness to make the moments of tension and terror that much more uncomfortable.
This has got an inherent silliness to it already. We're not going super comedy, but it's gonna have like the dark comedic beats to it. It'll just be funny at times. You know, people are tripping over gators. If nothing else, that we've got it with Manon, and maybe that's why Manon's doing what he's doing, is because he wants his hand regrown.
Yes.
We didn't even think about that.
No, we didn't even discuss that. That's an option there. And he knows what's going on. He's wondering, why am I not getting to take advantage of this?
Yeah.
Right. Or maybe you play into his fears. Like, well, I don't want to turn into an alligator. I hate alligators.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Why would I let you? Oh, I like that, actually. Mm-hmm. Is he's That's actually
He's got alligator racism.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yes.
He hates what's happening.
And that could also lead to, like, he really resents working for Lavinia, because he's like, oh, that alligator, horrible alligator lady.
Yeah.
But he still works for her because of his connection to the father that we've established. Oh, I like that. We've given a lot of motivation that way.
Yeah. She yells at him, hey, you don't have to bite my other hand off, lady.
Oh, I love that. That would be
nice. Nice.
Yeah, that could be a great hint at what's going on.
You could have like, and you could too, you and your big mouth. Like an alligator.
Yeah, I know. I like where we went end up with this. I think that, yeah, we all kind of had the same ideas as far as what was working and what wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
How we approached it was all a little bit different. But yeah, there we all picked up on slightly different things in there too to give us something really interesting.
Yeah, we've kept the romance that was there. We've kept the melodrama, really. We've just added to it.
Yes.
And we couldn't help ourselves.
The mystery is kind of what makes this movie work, because it's not – I hate that everything kind of happens in those last 10 minutes. He's transformed into the big monster, fights Manon, and they go out, and he runs and then falls into quicksand, and that's it. I'm like, that's it? That's all we get?
Yeah.
Like, I've been waiting for you to go full gator this whole movie, and then you fall into quicksand.
Yeah.
That has never been established up to this point. We could have had them walking out there and like, careful, that's quicksand.
Yeah.
Or something. Like, that drove me just, fuck. That's the whole 50s, the monster has to die regardless of motivations, right?
Yes. Yeah. And I think what we've done is
such
set it up,
a cheat.
Yeah. And we've set it up so that we could even have Paul come back. And we've also set it up, like, if we ever get a sequel, or the child is also set up for a possibility of a follow-up story, which could be really interesting.
And maybe puberty starts bringing this stuff out, and that's how we discover she's the daughter of these two. So we'd have to make her a little younger, maybe, initially.
Yeah, but you can sort of have her sitting there talking to the doctor, and you can show her face and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, you see her hand, and it's an alligator claw.
Do something. Go 50s cheese, right?
Yeah, exactly. Lean into it.
Yeah, lean into it.
But also lean into, like, kind of make maybe a Bruce Willis Unbreakable vibe. Like, she survived a lot of stuff that she probably shouldn't have.
Yeah, if nothing else, maybe the eyes are a little weird.
Yes.
Maybe they roll in a certain way that isn't natural.
She's got
there
a membrane.
All kinds of like things you could do that are either subtle or really, here it is, guys.
Yeah, webbing between her fingers. Yeah. Yeah, no, it could be fun. And this was fun. Thank you, Cade, for suggesting this as a fan challenge. And we always like fan challenges. And if you want to make your own, you can do that on our social media, at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and Invasion of the Remake at gmail.com if you want to send us an email like Cade did.
Or you can do the Contact Us page on our website, invasionoftheremake.wixsite.com/podcast.
That's right. And you can also find everything over on Libsyn, as well as your favorite podcast providers, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Google Play, which actually is switched over to Google Play Podcasts, I think, recently. So, but we're there as well. And all your favorite podcast platforms. So please share us out when you see us post on social media. If you aren't following us already, please do. And don't just like the post, but share it out on your wall as well to help get more
earballs
on the show. And of course, we drop every Tuesday on your favorite podcast platforms and every Thursday over on frickin' YouTube. That doesn't work when everybody's not in the room.
Yeah, the visual cue is missing for Trish there, and I wasn't paying attention. So.
But we're even on freaking YouTube, and that drops every Thursday over on YouTube as well. Make sure you subscribe and ring that bell for notifications when new episodes pop up. And you definitely want to make sure you do that, because not every episode's going to stay there and stay up, and the full library isn't there as well. So we do urge you, if you like the show, to find us on your favorite podcast platforms.
Because then you can take us with you.
That's right. Everywhere you go. Yeah, you might need to binge us over the next little bit. We've got a huge library for you to binge over self-isolation. So,
and the whole thing is you can watch the movies we're talking about while you binge us.
Exactly. Think of it as like a commentary, post-commentary thing. You watch the movie and then listen to us as a commentary track after the movie.
Yes, or as you watch it.
Or as you watch it.
Although this episode is probably longer than the movie.
I think it is.
I think we have passed it now. Okay, we got one. I know I said next week we got our big surprise, but I forgot this is a 5-week month, so we got one more episode before our special April stuff. You might already be seeing the teases over on our social media, but we got some really fun stuff planned for April, and you're not going to want to miss that. But we got one more comparison for you next week before we get into our April stuff. Until then, I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
And I continue to be Trish.
And we are out of here.
Paul.
Yes.
I'll never be able to tell you how sorry I am.
Don't blame yourself. I certainly don't. You can know everything. You're not God, Mark.
I feel as if I've been playing at it and been punished.
Forget it.
You all right?
Fine.
Keep your eyes closed. Just relax.